Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I met a guy recently who told me that he spends roughly $250,000 a month. I talked to another person recently who made $50 million at the age of 30. What do you do with that money? How do you spend it? How do you not spend it? What do you invest in? If you meet a rich person, these are questions everyone wants to know, but you're too embarrassed to ask. That's the whole premise of MoneyWise. We talk to real people who have made a significant amount of money, and we ask them all about their finances. My name's Sam Parr, and the podcast is called MoneyWise. That's one word, MoneyWise. You can find MoneyWise wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
He can come down the bench and he can yell in my ear.
5 seconds later, he was tossing me back out there because he knew that I was going to get the message. That's interesting, and I've had coaches throughout my entire hockey career, some that are able to do that, some that have maybe struggled with in the past. I mean, I obviously had a really good relationship with Don. I've known him since I was 16 years old, and so that's maybe different for me opposed to other guys on the team. But if you're able to get a coach that's able to do that with every guy, it's really big, and it helps a lot. And it's not just me as a rookie. I mean, he would get into it with older guys too on the bench, and he would make sure that they're playing at their best, and it is really important for a coach to be able to do that.
All right, good morning. It is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I am down here at One Bills Drive. We are getting ready for Brandon Bean to speak to the media at 11 a.m. The Bills are holding their first round of offseason workouts here this week. Today is one of those days. So we'll hear from Brandon Bean at 11. We'll hear from Sean McDermott at 12 noon, approximate times, of course. And then Josh Allen at around 12:30, along with select other players they'll bring to the podium. As opposed to many years past, the media will not be watching these specific workouts, but we will have footage to share and pass along. The Bills media department will send some footage, pictures possibly, but those will be shared on social and you can see that. And we'll ask, both Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott about, attendance this week. And of course, I'm sure, Joe, that we'll be asking Josh Allen about Stephon Diggs. This will be the first time, to my knowledge, Josh Allen has done any kind of public media since the trade of Stephon Diggs. I believe that's correct.
I also believe that that is correct. So I would imagine that will be the headliner. And we'll see if he mentions wide receiver names again, as he did on a podcast recently. Josh, could you start naming receivers? Like, that's it. And then he'll talk about Diggs. That's all I need.
Doesn't that tell you that he's dialed into those guys and, like, watching their games and having conversations with Brandon Bean? I mean, there was, Joe, I will tell you, like, we kind of got a little clue of this before the draft last year, but then it really came out after the draft that he knew all about Dalton Kincaid and wanted Dalton Kincaid. Like, that was a conversation he had with Brandon Bean about how they could use Dalton Kincaid and how much Josh really wanted to add that to the offense.
Maybe you know this. I had wondered this the other day. Is he allowed to be involved in, like, private workouts they have with draft guys? Like, could he, if they
no,
have...
No, because they don't work him out.
Oh, it's not like throwing routes or whatever to him. Okay. It's just visits.
Correct. So, here's a good question, though, and I don't know the answer to this. I think they can do this. I think they can bring him into a meeting if they want. You know what I mean? You can talk to him.
But
there's no doubt about that, I would think.
They can't put Xavier Legette out on the field and have Allen throw to him.
They can't put him out on the field at all with anybody throwing to him.
Gotcha.
You can't do the work. When they come here for the 30 visits, I'm assuming that's what you mean. When they come here for the 30 visits, they cannot work the player out.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's basically you come here, you do board stuff, chalk stuff. You can, I'm sure you can walk on the field and talk about things, but they can't actually do, you know, those kinds of working out in those official 30 visits. So unless the rules have changed over the years, but that's the way I understand them. That being said, I'm quite sure, you know, you also want to have, you know, Alan kind of understand and know and even be on board with, you know, what you want to do. Now, the other thing, what you can do, did you see what the Commanders did the other day with their prospects they had in, the quarterbacks especially?
They had them all together? Is that what they did?
Mm-hmm.
Like all at the same mm-hmm. time?
And took them all to Topgolf, I believe.
Okay. Wait, took them where? To Topgolf?
I think they did, yeah, if I remember reading correctly, yeah.
I want to see what kind of drives they've got before they're willing to invest.
I think more than anything, you want to see how they interact, who's the leaders, who's not the leaders,
yeah.
How they, a competitive environment, right?
Interesting. And they all agreed to this, apparently.
Yeah, apparently that was, I kind of came across it. I don't have the exact story in front of me, but there was something along those lines. They brought them all together, and I think they took them to Topgolf, and I think, yeah, and that's why you do that, right? You want to see. I remember hearing a story one time from a coach. I don't remember who this was talking, but I had listened to a coach say, they had, it was younger kids. This is more like middle school, high school kids. I think it was high school. And said, basically, took all the kids. There's about 20 kids and said, hey, you guys go do your thing. We're just going to be over here watching. We got a coach's meeting. Go, I need you to come up with go play a game, play a touch football game. But what they really were doing was the coach was watching to see who took charge, who organized it. And that's how they picked their captains and knew who their leaders were.
Okay. Interesting.
So I'm guessing it's something like that, right? You never know these games that everyone plays to try and bring these people in, and they test them. And some of these meetings are a little bit more challenging, a little more abrasive, you know. So we'll see where it goes. And the Bills will have their, you know, they've been having their 30 visits, and now we'll hear from Brandon Bean today. We are 1 week away from the 2024 NFL draft. We'll get to that a little bit later. We'll get to what the Bills might do. We'll get to our guest, Wilson Alexander, who covers the LSU Tigers football team. We'll talk with him at 10:30. Brandon Bean live here on the Extra Point Show at 11 a.m. I want to just rewind, though. I want to go back to what Alex Tuck just said on the intro here. We just heard his sound a little while ago. Joe, I've been reading some of the stories and quotes from yesterday. Been listening to some of the things these guys have said. I have to admit, I'm kind of stunned. How, I'm not going to say throw under the bus Don Granato. I don't think that's the term I'd like to use. I am kind of stunned, though, how many players themselves, this isn't Kevin Adams. Kevin Adams did this. But how many players have basically said, we were not held accountable, and we need a coach who will do that. Now, they all also talk very, very, you know, glowingly about Don and his relationships with them and how much they love him. No doubt about that. But there was certainly, it wasn't even an undertone. It was an outright, we were not held accountable. We need to be pushed harder. We need to be held more accountable. I mean, I'm looking at some of these quotes, and a lot of people, you know, writing things, but I'm reading some of the quotes from Matthew Fairburn of The Athletic, who actually put a story out early this morning. And it says, who is this one? Let me see, Tuck. He says, someone that is going to hold us accountable. Someone with experience, good hockey mind, smart, who brings energy into this locker room. At times, we weren't able to maintain energy. We weren't able to gather and create energy momentum ourselves. Someone that's able to do that and able to help us reach our full potential. Okay, that was one. Then how about this? Tage Thompson. He said, at times, you could see we were a great team, and at other times, we were too casual. I mean, these are damning kind of words and comments to me. And I go back to when Sam Reinhart was traded, when Casey Mittelstadt was traded, and they had things to say about how practices weren't that tough. And listen, I'll be the first to admit, I'm like, yeah, you know what? You can go, you're energized, you're going in, you're having these practices. It doesn't mean a lot to me. I'm starting to think it actually meant something now.
Yeah. The fact that all the leaders of the team, too, are the ones that are really out there saying it. Tage talking yesterday about this type of sentiment, like, you're right. Like, it was evident that they all feel that they're ready for it, at least now. If they weren't before, maybe they should have been, but that they're ready to be pushed. And Granato, you know, like, it's just maybe not what he was, or maybe he tried to do it this year and it's just not in his nature. So you're asking him to be something that he's not, and that's not easy either. So we'll see, though. There's player stuff, too, there. Like, I think the coach will have to start that. And Adams, the way he talked, like, they're going to bring in a coach like that. And then the question is, how do they react to it? Is it just words, or are they actually going to respond to being pushed by a different type of head coach? And are they going to push each other? That was another overall sentiment that all of them gave, which was that, you know, Tage talking about how the players were too casual at times, or how Dahlin talking about how they need more focus and practice. You know, that's...
Can I give you that quote from Dahlin? Because I think that's a money quote here. Okay, let me read what Dahlin said. This is from Matt's article at The Athletic. Quote, "We need a better focus and practice. We need to push ourselves. We have to understand that the practice is as important as the game. I think that's our main focus moving forward." Joe, that to me, that is again, I don't think you're throwing Don Granato under the bus necessarily because you like him, but that's a pretty damning quote on the head coach.
Yeah. Did you hear what Tuck said about Gerard Gallant?
I believe I did. Didn't we just play that? Is that what we just played on the
that
way coming
the,
in?
That that was on Gallant. Okay, right. I didn't even
hear
him talk
about
it.
Okay, yes. The that's what I heard.
That is because I know he referred to him as Turkey, and I missed that, so I didn't know that was his nickname. The way Tuck talked about Gallant, like, what we have is proof that Tuck responds to that type of coaching, right? Because he just said it. He said, I wouldn't be the player I am today without him, about Gerard Gallant. And the thing about Gallant, I mean, he is as extreme in this department as anybody in the league. He might even be further in this department than John Tortorella is at this point. He wears out his welcome on players and especially management. He's the guy that got left at the tarmac by the Panthers like 10 games after they won the division into the next year. They just left him there. They just went without him, told him, take a taxi to the airport. We're done with you. And he got fired by the Rangers after they were in the playoffs. They lost in a playoff series and they got rid of him. Vegas, too. They were in the finals and they got rid of him. That dude wears out his welcome, but he gets results everywhere, and his style is what Tuck described. He will get after you, like 1,000%. And Tuck, at least, the way he talked about Gallant, he endorsed the idea and said, I wouldn't be the player I would be, held me accountable as a rookie, as a young guy. So do they need it to that degree? Because I know Tuck would respond well to it. I really would wonder, like, if Gallant ended up being the guy, like, how would the other players react to that? Because that is just, like, Berube and Lindy and Brind'Amour, even if that's not likely. Like, a lot of these guys are somewhere, I think, in between what Granato maybe we think was and what we think guys like Tortorella are. I am a little curious to see how they would react to, we are just going to go all in with that mentality. Like, this dude is going to ride you into the ground in the name of, we are going to be the hardest working team, no mistakes, and he will get after you.
I agree with that. I wonder, because, Joe, you can go too far and the other way, right? I mean, is there a thing as too far, I guess? That's the question.
Sure.
What would be the equivalent? Let's do a football equivalent. I'm thinking of going from one coach to another like this. I'm thinking going from Tony Dungy to Bill Belichick overnight. Right?
Okay. Sure.
I mean, what would be the equivalent of this kind of thing?
In terms of the
Because
style,
I don't know, and I'm not saying Belichick is like in your face. He is like, you know, in behind closed doors. We've heard stories, things like that. He's a brilliant mind, masterful. And I'm not, I guess, you know, you bring in somebody who's not coming in as the greatest coach ever in NHL history. You know, I guess Scotty Bowman would be that guy, but he's not coaching right now and not going to be. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of the equivalent, because you can go the other way too far.
Yeah.
That's a shock to the system, and you may need it. You may want it. But man, that's even Adams, Joe, talked about how you got to have the delicate right balance. Yeah, you want to be somebody who has a communication and a relationship with players, because this is not the 1980s anymore. This is not Mike Keenan's hockey world anymore. It really isn't, right? You're not going to come in here and be like that. But at the same time, clearly you can't also just be like Don Granato and the players' friends and expect those kinds of results, because that didn't work.
Right. And again, like, I don't even know to what degree that really was Granato. Like, he, of course, had a relationship with them, but it seems more and more clear after the last couple of days that any idea of the fact the word accountability is getting thrown around.
What does that mean, by the way?
What, accountability? So,
someone said, I have to go find the quote. Someone said, hold us accountable when, Thompson mentioned accountability, said there needs to be repercussions for players who are not playing winning hockey.
Yeah.
So scratch them, right? I mean, I don't know.
Bench them in the middle of a game, right? Like,
but didn't people get mad at that when J.J. Paterka sat on the bench?
I think that did happen, yes. Right, you want... Well, that's funny because, you know... Everyone has their different way of thinking and what that actually is. That word is subjective, I think. And what Thompson is talking about is, right, like, guys being benched, guys being put in the press box. What Tuck just said about Gallant was that Gallant would scream and yell at him, but he would then put me back right out there 2 minutes later because he knew I would get the message.
Like, I like that.
That's accountability without harming your team by benching a guy who isn't, who shouldn't be benched. So... Again, I'm making the case maybe for Gallant here when it's not even really my favorite idea. It's just, you know, it's the football equivalent for me isn't even this type of thinking. It's what do you do in football? If you hire a defensive coach, what do teams often do when they hire a new coach? They hire an offensive coach. They want different. And maybe the hockey equivalent is, well, if you have more of a player's coach, then the next coach is going to be a different style when it comes to that. So the football equivalent I actually thought of, I would actually think more of like college football, right? Like Lincoln Riley, maybe, who is like the player coach equivalent in college football right now versus Saban, who will just scream in your face if you are doing something wrong.
Yep. That's right. I like that. That's a good, that's a shock to the system. But again, maybe that's what they need. I mean, it sounds like they're saying do it. Well, guess what? Here's the other point about this. Okay, then. They go out and do this, and I think Kevin Adams has a clear vision for doing something like this, but they go out and do it. Guess what? There's no, like, you can't now complain about what you get and how this other new coach, whoever it is holding you to that standard or pushing you like that and going too far. No, that can't be anymore. You're saying it. You're in the room. You're saying it. You're telling all the media, this is what we need. Okay, here we go then. Let's see who you get. By the way, shout out to our buddy Patrick Miller, Army Colonel who listens, whenever he gets a chance. He actually sent me a text yesterday after we were talking about this and said, and this is a guy, obviously, he's been a leader in the military for a long time. He said, I love your discussion on leadership. You're right. And specifically, Matt, when we were talking about all leaders have to be leaders at different times, different ways, right, Joe? There's not one right way to do it. Even Nick Saban. You watch Nick Saban. Sometimes I look at Nick Saban, and sure, he is like that, everything you just said. And sometimes he's a little bit more tact, right, when he's dealing with a player or a situation. And as always, in any walk of life, every player needs a little bit different. I like what you said about Gallant, and I agree, not my favorite. But what Tuck said is right. Yeah, get in your face, but at the same time, okay, now get out there and I trust you. Or sometimes, you know, I coach my son's team and I've been a high school coach, and I always say this. Some kids need a kick in the butt and get in their face and tell them what they're doing wrong. And some kids can't handle that, and you need to put your arm around them and tell them a little bit differently. I don't think it's any different with pro athletes. Everybody's a human being. I don't think there's one right way to do it. And that's the challenge Kevin Adams has now.
Right. Everyone responds to different forms of coaching.
That's right. And
really,
leadership.
Which is why you kind of want a coach that's able to do multiple things, like can treat everyone in a different manner if they need to. That, man, that's when Lindy comes to my mind. Like, I don't know that 1,000% to be exactly what Lindy was, but it feels like whatever you hear about Lindy is that's kind of what it was, right? Like, he has a good feel, especially these days, maybe a good feel of... I heard Lindy... Oh, where was it? It was somewhat recent. It was maybe his last press conference with the Devils, or maybe it was somewhere that he was talking about New Jersey, where he made a comment about how he met with the players before the season on how they wanted him to coach. You know what I mean?
I like that.
You guys tell me what you want from this season. You want me to be a hard ass on you guys? Because if you do, then from here on out, rest of the season, I'm going to be that way. And there's no going back. That's how I'm going to be the whole way. That's kind of the sentiment that Lindy mentioned with how he treated the Devil situation. And maybe a lot of guys do that. But I just heard that and kind of like that. Like, you guys tell me what you want. Because the way the Sabres talked yesterday, it sounds like if the next coach comes to them and asks that question, how do you want me to treat you guys this year? Do you want me to be hard on you? Because I will. And the way they talked yesterday, I feel like their answer would be, yes, we do.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, really interesting point. And I also remember, didn't someone say that, Lindy, he talked about having to change his style, right? Isn't that something he did? Like, he had to do, he did, like, even talked about doing that. And that's what leaders do, right? Leaders do change their style. I mean, look, we've we talked about the Lindy thing. We can continue to talk about it. I'm not sure if it's my favorite idea because it's one of those things that you're going back to the past, but I agree with you that he seems like kind of the right type of mentality to be able to come in and do what Kevin Adams wants to do. The Sabres are looking for a head coach. We'll see where that goes, how it unfolds. And, of course, we'll have full coverage for you all week and beyond here on WGR Sports Radio 550. In the meantime, Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase. I want to read you this tweet I got as we get connected with our fans, Joe. That's his brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Mark tweets in and says, "The comments by the players are very concerning to me. The fact that you need someone to push you and hold you accountable tells me we don't have the right players. What professional doesn't push themselves and doesn't hold themselves accountable?" And I generally do agree with that. I think too much a lot of times is made on, well, it's the coach's job. Well, it is your job, too. It's your job very much so to make sure you're in the right, you know, spot to compete and do what you have to do. I also think that this comes back to the C word. The coach can create a culture, though, where you're comfortable not being like that, if that makes sense.
Yep. So, all right. We'll see what they get. I don't expect them to hire Gallant, by the way. Gallant is, it feels like he can be a crazy person at times. And I just don't know that you want to go to that length. The other side of that, though, is he has made it everywhere he's gone. I'm going to double check that. He was Columbus's coach maybe like a long time ago, and that did not work. But since then, look at his resume as a coach. So yeah, Columbus from 2003 to 2007. Let me just throw that out for a moment. 2014, he arrives in Florida. 91 points year one, 103 points year two. They win the division. The next year, he's fired 22 games in. With a winning record, by the way. Again, kind of a sign that he wears on people. 2017, Gallant arrives in Vegas. They immediately make the Stanley Cup final. The next year, 93 points, they make the playoffs. Bounced in round one. And then year three, that's the year, okay, now I remember this. They are in a playoff spot. They're like second in their division, but they're only at 54 points in 49 games, and they fire him because their standard is like, we're the best in hockey, and being second or third isn't enough. Then he goes to the Rangers, immediately makes the playoffs, wins two rounds, and then the next year goes back to the playoffs, loses in game seven of the first round, and is eliminated. So in four of Gallant's last 5 years, or five of his last seven, he has made the playoffs and has gone on two deep playoff runs. So he gets results, but it's very also clear that it's just there's a timeline, right? Like, and for here, maybe that fits, because if you're a Sabre fan right now, do you even care what happens 3 years from now if I told you the next two are going to be playoff berths?
No, that's right. That's right. And as much as we all want a cup here, and as much as Kevin Adams wants a cup and everybody wants a cup, clearly, though, the goal is to get to the next step, and then you try to get over that hump after that, but get to the next step. This is not a team that has a window closing. It should be opening. It should be wide open right now. You have a little time, theoretically, based on their age, but yes, you want to get to the ultimate goal, but there might be a couple steps along the way, and that might take a couple years, and if you get to getting into the playoffs and losing the first round next year, at least that's a step, and you need to keep progressing and showing that as well. We'll take a timeout when we come back. Wilson Alexander, who covers the LSU Tigers football program, is going to join us. Malik Nabers, probably too out of range for the Bills, obviously, unless they make a massive move up. But how about Brian Thomas Jr.? And how about Jaden Daniels and what he sees as his NFL prospects? Maybe he's the second or third overall pick in this year's draft. We'll do that when we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Bus Weekly's watching this one tonight. Here's Jaden Daniels on the run. And going down the sideline. Caught by Brian Thomas Jr. And he will take it to the house. 86 yards.
A touchdown from Jaden Daniels, LSU football. Is Brian Thomas Jr. going to be a Buffalo Bill 1 week from today? The Bills may have to trade up. They could stay at 28. A lot of interesting mock drafts seeing where Brian Thomas Jr. falls, but certainly one of the players that Bills fans have been looking at as a possible fit for their wide receiver room, a area wide receiver where the Bills are certainly going to target at some point, probably early in the 2024 NFL draft. Joining us on the West Her Hotline right now is Wilson Alexander. He covers LSU football for The Advocate and NOLA News. Wilson, it is Sal and Joe here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Sal and Joe. It's good to be with you guys.
Yeah, you got it, man. We just heard Brian Thomas there catching a touchdown pass. He's the guy that's in our sights first and foremost. We can talk about Malik Nabers as well. I don't think the Bills will be able to get high enough to trade to draft him, but you never know. So let's start with Brian Thomas Jr. Is the hype real for what the Bills would be getting in Brian Thomas Jr.? Seems like kind of an all Mr. Everything wide receiver everywhere you look.
Well, you know, this is a guy who didn't really even start playing much football until later on in his high school career here in Louisiana. He was a basketball guy, and that basketball background has translated to the football field in a big way. But he's also fast. You know, he can stretch the field vertically, and that's what you saw last year. You know, his first years at LSU were okay. He never had more than 400 yards in a season. And last year going into the year was, can he break out? Can he finally be a true, you know, SEC number two receiver to complement Malik? Well, he ends up being a true SEC one. And then having the two of them gives LSU one of the best tandems in the country. And so, you know, Brian has certainly been able to, you know, have that rise that everybody wanted to see out of him this past year. He's got a lot of great qualities. He can jump. He can stretch the field, like I said. And he's probably a better route runner than people give him credit for. But he's had a fantastic season to put himself in this position.
What explains for you, for him, like there are some analytic numbers, or not even like super advanced numbers, just like yards per route run and stuff like that, that are a little bit lower for him. What do you think explains that? Could it be as simple as Nabers is in the offense and you're just always going to be second fiddle when you have a guy of that talent level on the other side, or I should say really in the slot?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say because, you know, you could take a theory. There's so many possible different theories for those sorts of things, right? Like, you know, Nabers, you know, you had him. You also had Kyron Lacy who as their number three who, you know, they liked, and he was able to do some different things too. And, you know, it's also just kind of what they asked Brian to do in this offense last year. And Malik to some extent too was, you know, but Malik where he was sort of sometimes their intermediate guy, Brian was really like the guy going deep a lot. And so maybe it was just sort of what LSU asked him to do last year and what the offense required of him. Maybe, you know, that's part of it, but it also like, yeah, like would he have done more if Malik wasn't in there? Possibly. I don't know. It's hard to have a definitive answer to that when really, because for LSU last year, none of that really mattered. It was because they had the number one offense in the country, you know, and it was, whatever it worked for them last year just sort of worked. And it's hard to say what the reason for that would be. Mm-hmm.
Wilson, a couple of things the Bills really want in their wide receiver group and something they've talked a lot about this specific year, run after catch ability. Catch, with the ball in your hands, what kind of playmaking ability can you have? That's one of the reasons they went out and got Curtis Samuel. They're going to move him around and do a lot of things with him. So that's number one. Tell us what Brian Thomas Jr. can do with the ball in his hands once he does catch it. And number two, what about blocking as a wide receiver? They just lost Gabe Davis, a very, very good blocker who was on the field 95% of the time because he could play in any situation. So run after catch ability and blocking ability for Brian Thomas Jr.
The run after catch ability is certainly there. I mean, Malik was probably stood out more in that regard last season. His run after catch is one of probably his greatest assets. But Brian was, you could see it, you know, on those deep routes. One play that just sort of stands out to me in that regard. It's not necessarily maybe the best example of this because he had just open field. But LSU was playing Army, and Jaden Daniels rolls out to his right and just sort of flicks a ball to Brian Thomas because he broke off his route, scramble drill rules, started running deep, and caught a ball basically on his fingertips and just went. That's the thing, his speed, I mean, he ran, what was it, like the 4.33, 4.34 at the combine. So, you know, he's got that speed downfield to separate from people, and that really shows up, I think, a lot last year in his tape when he, in terms of yards after catch, like we said, they had him running, going deep a good bit. And so, you know, he'd catch a ball over his shoulder and then just take off. And I feel like that happened a good bit during the season. We even saw a kind of similar sort of moment in some ways anyway at LSU's Pro Day in terms of, you know, vertical route down the field on the right sideline, catches up to a ball that Jaden throws deep, pulls it in just with his fingertips and you know, steps into the end zone. And I think that's sort of where you saw his yards after catch the most. He'll probably need to continue to show what he can do once he gets the ball in his hands on, you know, shorter and intermediate routes. Doesn't like stand out in my mind after last season necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure it's there because of the speed, you know, and also a guy who's, you know, got the length that he does. The blocking on the perimeter, you know, it's hard to say for sure, frankly, because LSU last year did not run to the perimeter very much. Like there wasn't, the receivers had to block, don't get me wrong, but like, it wasn't like it was as much of a focus of the offense last year. They were a really heavy inside zone team, zone read team. But they also had to be able to, you know, set up blocks downfield for when Jaden Daniels would scramble. So, you know, he did have to be aware of that and be good at that. It was never an issue by any means. You know, it wasn't something like, oh gosh, Brian Thomas, you know, can't block on the perimeter or anything like that. I mean, he's a guy who's known for, you know, being willing to do that. It's just not something that LSU really had a ton of in the offense last year because they didn't really run like perimeter runs and they weren't running like receiver screens where you needed to block for your teammate all that much. But I do think he can do it. He just wasn't really – they didn't do a whole lot of it last year where it was like such an important piece of the offense.
Man, everything I'm hearing you say, like it's just reminding me about a lot of the stuff I feel like we heard about DK Metcalf when he entered the league knowing they're different players. Actually, I think – you talked about the speed and athleticism. It's historic in that I think Thomas with Metcalf and then maybe A.D. Mitchell this year are like the only three receivers to ever run 4.35 at 6.3 or bigger. Like they're at a historic level for their size and speed. So rather than just ask you, like, does he remind you of Metcalf? Like Metcalf came right into the league after not producing in college a lot and was just ready to go, one of the top two receivers in Seattle. And Wilson, like, that's kind of the situation here. Like Diggs out, Gabe Davis out, like they're gonna need someone to eat up targets right away. So I guess my question would be, is how pro ready you think he is versus how much of a project or how much work he needs to become a fully formed NFL receiver?
I think he's pretty darn ready. I mean, you know, will he need to continue to develop and get coached up in certain areas of his game? Of course. I would imagine that most rookies do. But, like, I think that there's so much that you can have him do right away, like we talked about, as a vertical threat. And then while maybe some other parts of his game catch up, like, that can still be something that is used right away and probably used to great effectiveness, especially, you know, when we talk about the Bills and Josh Allen's arm, like, you know, send him deep and Josh will probably be able to hit him. So it's I do think that it would probably, you know, even if it wasn't the Bills, I think that Brian Thomas will be able to have an effect as a rookie right away. Is he going to, you know, have, I don't want to say like definitively, oh, you know, make some prediction and, you know, be caught on freezing cold takes that he's going to be like some fantastic, you know, thing right off the bat. It's hard to know.
That'll happen in this business. We know that.
Exactly. Exactly. And I try to avoid those situations. But I do think he'll be an effective wide receiver as a rookie. And while the other parts of his game catch up, you know, still be able to do quite a few things that help an offense.
Wilson Alexander, by the way, on the Western Hotline, LSU football, instead of asking to break down Malik Nabers, because I don't think anybody really feels the Bills will get high enough to be able to do that, how different are Nabers and Thomas? How far away is Thomas from Nabers? Maybe even their ceiling and what they can be in the NFL from what you see.
You know, in terms of like how far they are, they how far away they are from each other in terms of like skill set and ceiling. Like, it's probably not that far. I mean, these are two really good receivers. They were both like simultaneously the kind of like the catalyst for what LSU did a lot last year. I would say in terms of where they are right now, though, like Malik is probably a little bit more developed. I mean, he had a 1,000-yard season as a sophomore. He had a little bit more playing time as a sophomore than Brian Thomas did. He's the one who was a Biletnikoff finalist last year and ended up by the end of his career, was breaking some LSU records. So he might be like a little bit further along at this stage. But I think in terms of what their ceiling is, it's probably about the same if they can both max out their potential. But Malik, their skill sets are what, when you ask that question, what stands out to me is what's quite different. Whereas, you know, Malik has that speed, obviously. I mean, he ran like very similar time at his pro day, but he's shorter than Brian Thomas is. You know, Brian Thomas is like 6'3", almost 6'4", and Malik is about 6 foot flat. One other slight measurable that stands out is they have the same size hands. Like Malik, even though they're that height difference, Malik wears like a 4XL glove, and he's got these massive hands, and he's, you know, Brian does too, but, you know, Malik for his size, it really stands out. And Malik is also, he's a little bit maybe like, we talked about the yards after catch standing out from him last year. He did a little bit more on like the short and intermediate game and then turning up field. It's really hard for defenders to tackle him in space last year. Not that it wasn't hard for them to tackle Brian too, but that stood out more on Malik's tape and in his game last year. So he does more in that regard maybe than Brian Thomas did. But it doesn't, you know, again, that's kind of just what they had them doing in the offense to some degree, partially because it was what fit their skill set best and it helped max them out. So they're different, I think, styles of receiver, but they could both end up in the same place based on their talent level.
All right. How much should we fear New England if they draft Jaden Daniels at number three?
If they're able to use him properly, then you should, you know, probably fear him.
Or respect it at least a little bit. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I think that, again, it's with every quarterback, it's about actually, you know, having the right system around him and the right people around him to be able to, you know, get everything out of him. I think that's true in every case and will be with Jaden too. But, you know, if he's put in the right system in New England and they're able to use what he does so well, then, yeah, he should be respected and down the line here maybe feared a little bit, especially as he sort of gets used to the NFL. He'll probably start to get better if he's able given that chance to succeed, because that's what you sort of saw that arc in his college career. You know, it was year five where he had that breakout, and it was also year two in a stable system. Like, stability really, really helped him. And so if he's able to find that in the NFL, then he's probably going to have a great chance to succeed. I mean, it's a guy who, you know, the things that he can do with his legs put so much stress on defenses, and if that translates to the NFL, then he will definitely be a handful.
Wilson Alexander, thanks for doing this, man. I know we've been trying to get you on, and I really appreciate it. I'm glad we had a chance to get it to work out, and who knows? I mean, there's quite a few LSU prospects that could wind up getting drafted. We didn't touch on several of them. We got a center over there. You got a defensive lineman over there. So who knows? Maybe after the draft, we'll get you back on and talk about somebody coming from the Tigers to the Buffalo Bills. Thanks a lot for doing this today.
Thanks for having me, y'all, anytime.
All right, thank you very much. Wilson Alexander, who covers LSU football. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back here. When we do, Joe will wrap you to the top of the hour, and then we're going to have Brandon Bean live here at One Bills Drive, Bills Media Day, for their first round of workouts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices, anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show rolls along here on WGR. We're going to be hearing from cast of characters, Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, Josh Allen. The Bills have voluntary workouts this week. We also have the Sabres continuing their locker room cleanout at the moment. You've got Dylan Cousins talking right now. He says he's going to go play for Canada at the World Championships. Also, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen talking about contract situation and that anything could happen, but he really didn't quite say that. I mean, he did, but more along the lines of he would like a long-term deal. I mean, he hinted at that. He basically said it, that the long-term contract would be what he'd be looking for, or what he would want at least, which no surprise. But that's going to be a very interesting decision for the Sabres this offseason, is what's the length of Lukanen's deal? Because, hey, seven-year deal, again, I could get why he would push for that and would feel like he's earned it. He developed into the number one goalie that they wanted him to be. But at the same time, one good year from a goalie, goalies are more up and down than any position in the sport. So if I'm the Sabres, I'm looking at a 2 or 3 year bridge deal. I know bridge deals don't happen all that often, but you still get them once in a while. And this, to me, would absolutely be calling for that type of spot. Jeremy Swayman in Boston is maybe a good comp that the Bruins, after one really good year last year, the Bruins liked him but said, we're not doing long-term right now. So they actually went to arbitration, and they resulted in a one-year deal with Swayman. Maybe that's an idea, by the way, for the Sabres, because if I'm right, I think the way Lukanen's contract works out is if they did a one-year deal for Lukanen, then you get to see him for another year, and sure, if he plays well again, the price goes up even more, but I think I'd be willing to play that out and see what happens, not give him the 7-year deal just yet. Do it one more time because it's goalie, because it's a little more up and down and tricky to project. And then if you, after one more good year or two more good 2-year contract bridge deal, then you might be ready at that point. Or not, because maybe Devon Levi is also great at that point, and then you keep him instead. Who knows? Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll start hearing from Bills, coaches, GMs, and players after this here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio's down on One Bills Drive. We'll hear from him as well, asking some questions. Coming up next here on WGR. All right, welcome back, Extra Point Show. We're just about to get fired up down at One Bills Drive, voluntary workouts. We're going to hear from Bean, and here is Bean. McDermott and Allen to come. Here's the Bills GM.
For his 4 years here was a number one role, so we have not filled a number one role. I would say we have a group of guys, as we sit here today, that we believe bring different skill sets. We like the group. You know, would we like to add to it at some point? Yes. I'm not sitting here thinking we have a glaring hole. But I get the question. I get the perception. You know, sometimes you have young guys on your roster that you believe in as well that can ascend. But they have to prove it, too. You know, just like last year we were getting the question about linebacker. Terrell Bernard had to prove it. You know, even Tyrell Dodson in his form when he played for us had to go prove it because he'd mainly been, you know, a backup, you know, prior to that.
Hey Brandon, what's sort of the range right now for
grades on your guys' board? Yeah, I mean, more than last year, but not 28. Yeah, good question. You know, I'll take any call, Ryan. you know me. You know, next week, you know, the phones start ringing all over the place. You know, teams that want to bail out of, you know, I don't know if teams in the top 10 are calling us. I wouldn't expect that. But teams in the teens will start calling because maybe they got their eye on a couple guys, and if they don't get those, they would soon add something, maybe depending on what's on the board. We'll assess them all, have conversations, see who's on the board when their picks come up, and we'll be doing the same. We'll also be looking the other way. If we did not draft Dalton last year, I think I told you we had some options to go back, and one that I really liked that would have put us into the second round that would have added, I thought was, you know, good asset, you know, to do that. So we'll do both ways. I think that's the best way, prepare for every scenario. We'll go through next week with the scouts the various scenarios that could happen and just play the board. You know, Dalton was so close to us, and I really thought he was a good weapon for this offense, and it's one of those, right or wrong, I probably deserve criticism for trading up sometimes. I get that, but if there's a guy I like and I'm confident, I want to go to bed Thursday night that I got him. And if that happens again, I could do it. You know, I can't really tell you whether we go up, go back, or draft at 28. I have no idea how it's going to fall.
Brandon, you said that teams in the top 10 aren't likely going to call you, but that doesn't lose you from calling them, correct?
Yeah, there's no rule. I can call all the way to 1, John. Think they'll take my call? I haven't called him. Yeah.
Brandon, is there how's the value put on future picks? Like, if you were to trade the second round pick, you know it's 60, so there's a value.
Yeah.
You and other teams, is there a general way that's looked at if you were doing anything, either obtaining picks or trading picks in the future?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, too. I would say you're generally going to say it's, you know, you're looking at what team it is. So, but if you're not sure if this team is a perennial playoff team, you're going to back it up a round. So if you wanted, like this year, let's say you wanted to trade, take our second round pick out of the way. Say we made our first, it's in the second round, and we wanted a pick. Somebody's going to make us trade next year's one to do that. It's going to be a round difference, and that's where you'd have to decide, you know, and if you're accepting someone's pick, if we're in the third round this year and someone offered, we don't have a third, but just pretend we had a third, and someone offered us next year's two, part of what I may be thinking about is what kind of team, is this a perennial playoff team, is it not, all those things, but in general, you're going to move it around up.
We spoke with you at the owners' meetings, and we talked about disappointment of not getting the third-round comp. You did get the fourth-round comp. You said you had to move some things, think differently. Since then, you added a second next year for Step Up. How much does that at least increase your ability, maybe this year even, to move around the board?
Yeah, I mean, they're all assets. They really are. You know, no matter what year you have them, you're allowed to trade – you know, picks 20 in 24, 25, and 26. Can't go beyond that at this point. So any of those that we acquire are always assets. And, again, the main thing, you know, and our board's pretty well set. You know, there's still some conversations. We got to go through some mocks, which could tweak a guy here or there. But, you know, you're just kind of reading the board. And if there's guys sticking out, and you want to use an asset to go get it, you do it. But, you know, I wouldn't say, hey, we're definitely going to trade the number two pick that we acquired. I wouldn't expect that, but I'm not saying we wouldn't either.
Brandon, what about next year's first? Are you comfortable or willing to include that in a package that potentially could move you up the board?
I mean, I'm never going to say no. I don't love trading future ones. You know, if you go back to when I got here, what we were trying to do, knowing that we were most likely going to be in the quarterback market if we found the right guy, was creating assets to not have to trade the next year's one. And so if it makes sense, John, I'll do it. But I don't love it. I just know that there were times in Carolina in some of my younger years where we did trade it, and I felt more times we were disappointed later that we did it. Like, that player we got didn't put us all the way at the top. And then you get to the next year's draft, and you're going, we would have been picking 17th. And you go, look who we just could have had. And so it's easy today to put it on the credit card and say, don't worry about next year's one. But I, you know, hopefully I'm still sitting here. I know how tough that is to do that. But listen, we did it for Stephon Diggs when we traded for him and set through that. If there's something that makes too much sense, heck yeah.
There's been a lot made about the depth and talent of this year's wide receiver class. How do you view that moving first round and on?
Yeah, I mean, there is depth. There's a lot of different style receivers from size, speed, quicks. Some have better hands. Some are not great rack. They got good hands, but you're probably not getting much. Some other ones maybe have less size, but if you can get the ball in their hands, they kind of turn into a little bit of a running back. So there's a lot of different, you know, one of the things that people don't always know the full details on, though, is what are their mentals? What are their smarts? What are their habits? And those playing big, and our coaches and our scouts have really worked hard, you know, the scouts for a while, but the coaches have really jumped in now trying to quiz these guys either at their pro days, at privates, Zooms. Obviously, you've seen some of the names we've had in here. We have tried to go through that, and some have really tested out well. This guy, he's going to pick it up, and there's some others that we have some concerns about. And then there's medical. You know, we just had the medical meeting, and so like every year, there's guys that pop up, and buyer beware that you know, doesn't mean you can't take them, but you may choose a player that someone else, you know, from a scouting stance, maybe a little less than this guy, but this guy's a lot healthier than this player. Not a huge difference, but all those factors can happen when you turn the card in and make that final decision that we're not going to walk down here and share and you say, well, why didn't you choose this guy or this guy? I'm not going to, you know, just those are some of the things that you don't know. I know there's a lot of stuff out there. Highlights are posted of guys, man, this would be great to have this guy, but that's not the whole picture. He can, you know, if he's here, you know, like this week, yeah, I mean, he just got here this week, but I'm not sure if he met any of the guys or not, Sal, to be honest with you. But, yeah, he could do that. Josh loves the draft. Like, he loves the process. I mean, I think a lot of people do. It's made, you know, all these the mock simulators and all that stuff, and he loves that stuff. And so he loves to watch, you know. Now, some of the stuff he may be watching is highlights. Some of it's maybe cut-ups too. But, yeah, we, you know, he'll ask about, you like this guy or this guy? And he may go watch, you know, and throw his 2 cents in. He hasn't done the extensive work that we have, but I love that he loves it and likes to hear how we see things. I have talked to him since trading Steph. Yeah, he's talked to him this week. You know, we talked on the phone at some point after we traded Steph that week, and then hadn't really, you know, I think he went down to the Masters last week. Haven't really spoke to him much since then. But, yeah, he's been in the building. He swung by my office, saw him upstairs in the offensive staff room yesterday, and same old guy. He's doing well and excited about the team, and it's good to see him back. He's I think he's excited about where we're at, and obviously knowing the draft's coming up, like to Sal's question, ask, you know, what are the guys you like? I see all these names. Who, you know, who do you guys like?
You said with wide receiver you haven't necessarily filled that number one wide receiver role. How much of a priority is that? Like, you look at some of the young offenses around the league, Houston, Green Bay, don't really necessarily have a bona fide number one, kind of spread it around, have some is that something that you definitely need in 2024?
No. I mean, listen, you'd love to have two guys out there that are number ones. You know what I mean? Or like, you're always going to try to find the best players you can. No, you need – what you need are guys that in this offense that are smart, versatile, selfless, and can make the plays that their skill set allows them to make. And if it's a tall guy that's going to – you know, Josh is going to throw up a 50-50 ball, he's got to come down with it. If it's a guy that we want to get the ball in his hands and when we need some rack, he's going to do that. I think that's what we're looking for. You know, if there's a one that pops up either in, you know, free agency or draft that makes sense for us or a really good two, you know, we'll do it. But I don't think having a one or not having a one, Matt, doesn't mean we can't have success, you know, on offense or as a team.
Brandon, in that, along that line, was it more important in, as you reflect back to trading for Steph, was it more important for the offensive development to have a number one at that time as opposed to now where you know what Josh's capabilities are?
Yeah, I think Josh was I think he's still ascending, but I think there was – more ascension that we were hoping to continue to see from him. I mean, he was, you know, coming from rookie second year, you know, we go losing Houston and, you know, that year we had added in 19 year two for Josh, we had added Cole and John Brown who really, really helped our offense. And, but as the season went along and people saw how we were using them, I did feel like we needed someone else to offset what they were doing because they were starting to try to figure out how to try to take them away. And I think that happened in that Houston game where we settled for field goals. You know, yes, we blew a lead, but I thought that game, if we could have got touchdowns in the first half, could have been over. And we let a team, you know, that was more experienced than we were hang around. And so that was the impetus. What else can we get? Called on receivers, including Steph that year, but they weren't willing to trade him. And, you know, at that point, Steph was available and thought that's what the offense needed at the time. But I do think, to your point, I think I get where you're at, John, as you're saying now that Josh is ascended to the player he is that a requirement? I don't think so. Yeah, they've been great. I mean, two guys full of energy, loving the process. I mean, not all coaches love this process. They just want to get their playbook installed. Players are kind of, these two guys, they're in my office asking questions, asking for more guys. How do we do this? And so, you know, as we close in on the process, I'm going to continue. And I'll give them some assignments. Hey, sit with your position coach or your staff and look at these two guys or these three guys. We got them kind of similar. How do you guys see them? And then tell me how you would use them and make sure we have them in the right order to how you're seeing them. But we've had a lot of conversations. They've obviously been very involved. Joe went out on the road some too to see some guys, you know, from private standpoints, different positions. And he loved it, loves that process. So it's been fun, you know, the first off season working with both these guys in their new roles.
You said goodbye to a lot of veteran players. Do you think that there is – your team already is younger. Is there more opportunity if you make the right picks for a bunch of guys to make this team?
I do. I think there's – I think – you know, like anything, change is not always bad. Change can be hard when you've had the stability we've had at some of the positions. And a lot of those guys, you know, were captains. So is that uneasy? Yeah, it is. But sometimes your team has to evolve. It's probably the best word I can do it. And we do feel there are some guys currently on the roster that can ascend into some leadership roles. Is it going to be where you know, the guys that left off? No, but hopefully we can grow them, and that's part of the development of our organization. And then, yeah, in this draft, you know, what pieces can we add to come in and either, you know, start — it's hard to start for a rookie, but start — or be a key backup, help us on teams, and be a guy that we're going to count on, you know, for sure in the future. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of great opportunities, and I'm excited about where we're at, and I'm excited about the draft next week. Yeah, it does, Jay. I mean, I think you never know how it's going to fall exactly. Like, who's — you wish you had that crystal ball to say, all right, do I want to give this fifth round pick away? Well, tell me who's going to be there in the fifth. You never have that. So you do hope the board falls favorably for you to land some of the guys that we've been able to, you know, Shakir, whoever else that you know, fortunately fell to the fifth. So you do have to keep that in mind. And I do think, to your point, we have, you know, some of the guys — I know both the seventh rounders got claimed last year. We've had some guys that we've drafted and hoped if they didn't make it, we could get them to a practice squad that didn't. I do think those guys may have a better chance this year if we select them. Yeah, I mean, in fairness to Josh, like, he's — you remember what I said as far as he doesn't know the medical, he doesn't know how smart they are per se. Now, he could probably ask a coach, you know. It's more like the different skill sets, you know, how would this guy — if we took this guy, how would he fit in the offense? Where would you put him? Would you line him up at X? Could he play F and Z? Then what would you do if he went inside? Who would you move outside? Some of those conversations. I think Josh is not trying to be, you know, overstep and say something without having all the — he just doesn't have all the answers to do that. But love his input, love his excitement for sure. And I'd be stupid to not include him and let him kind of see what some of these guys — and like I said, he was watching film last year. I know he's already been watching film this year, some of these guys, since he's been in here this week.
On the subject of sub-package edge rushers, so you demand your defensive ends set the edge. Mm-hmm. You keep five guys at defensive ends, active, sometimes only four. A Bryce Huff type day three guy. My impression is there isn't a lot of room on your board for a smaller edge rusher who you are never going to want on the field on first down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that depends on how many we would keep on the 53. So, yeah, you can't – you got to be careful how many DPRs that you put. But if the talent's there, Mark, we'd still take it and figure it out. You know, we've had at least 1 year, maybe two, where we've kept six ends. Now, that player better help us on fourth down. On special teams, like, he better wear multiple hats. But it could also be a guy that maybe you don't count on him right away unless you have injury, but you've got him in, you know, in the bullpen ready to roll. If he can rush the passer, we know how important it's a passer league. I'm not sure just going to pass him up and say, well, it's not a good fit this year because maybe.
So there's some guys on the board.
Yes. Yeah.
I read you.
Would love to. I mean, I think there are guys in the draft that can do that. They can come in and maybe they're not day one starters where we're picking. If we took one in the first, we'd have to see what's there. Or if we took one later, I do think there's players, though, in more than just the first round that can come in either as a DT or a DN and help us in the rotation. And, you know, we rotate our guys a lot anyway, so I don't get too caught up in, you know, whether he's a starter or not. We run 8-9 deep on game day as it is. Yeah, a veteran player, obviously missed a year. He had a late ACL. I think he got his right before the playoffs in I think it was late, maybe early January of that year, the previous season, just where his rehab was. You know, he wasn't healthy. Remember, we worked him out, and he ended up signing with Dallas's practice squad. But he's a veteran. He's played tackle guard. And I would think he would come in and you know, provide some depth at right tackle at least, and then also interior, you know, I think, you know, wherever we need depth, competition. So I would say right tackle and then, you know, guard. You know, it's I'm not too worried about next year's the depth of the draft. It's so hard to tell with NIL. You know, there's guys that we thought this year would come out, but the schools are really coming up with some pretty good money to keep these these kids, giving them $600-700 guaranteed. You know, for guys that like that. You know, that guarantee, I got this, I don't have to go compete for this, it's mine. So we are seeing a changing landscape from that standpoint. There's definitely, the last couple of years, guys that we had pegged that even some of the schools thought they would probably lose. So, you know, this was a light underclassman, you know, draft, and there's going to be more guys. But there are guys that have stayed in the COVID, that stayed and played 5 years, that are going to – there's going to be some – guys with more age on them that are still going to get drafted probably later in the – not that there won't be some early, but there's definitely a lot of 23, 24, maybe even 25-year-olds that are getting drafted because of COVID plus NIL. So not too crazy worried about next year's draft. It'll be fine. It's just really focused on the positions that we need to get answered between now and September, whether it's this draft or free agency afterwards, and then making sure we have depth in all the right spots. 30. Yeah, there's some guys that maybe we had conflicting reports about the learns or the personality that we wanted to get around or verify. So, I mean, there's not a lot of those, but there are some that you're – and maybe it's breaking a tie. I got a couple of guys here. I know maybe they're like this. I'm just making up a round in the second round. And I already know this guy can learn, and they've got the same skill set, but this one I'm unsure of. I get this guy in here, and I'm like, yeah, he's not quite the same learner. Maybe – if the draft falls and they're both there, they're the highest on the board, I take this guy. If not, as long as I'm still comfortable that it's above the bar learning. Now, sometimes you bring a guy in here and you're just like, this guy is going to mentally struggle to play the position that we would need him to play, and we can't take him in the second round. We need to drop him some, but he's going to be more of a project.
I know you talked about Josh and his interest, but he doesn't know everything about these young players. But he does know Steph. When you said you talked to him before the trade, I was just curious, like, that's almost like a philosophical change. He's been their number one receiver. What was his reaction when he knew that this was the possibility? And because it is a major change to a guy he's known and had a lot of success.
Yeah, I'm going to keep that between me and Josh. I get the question, but I think that's best for our conversation to keep that in. Josh understands that sometimes I'm calling him, take Steph out with decisions, you know, whether it's calling him the year we signed Mitch when he didn't really know Mitch and, you know, hey, probably won't be able to bring Matt Barkley back. Like, you know, things like that. People he's formed a relationship with, obviously has a relationship with Steph. Josh is really mature and understands that sometimes I'm calling him about things to say, how do you see it? Sometimes I'm calling him just to say, hey, this is where we're at. I don't want you to be blindsided, things like that. I'm not really going to weigh into where the conversation with Steph. I just think it needs to be kept between me and Josh, just out of respect. Sorry, Matt. Yeah, we feel good. We got good competition. Kyrie's back. I haven't really talked to him, but saw him in the hallway yesterday or day before. And Christian Benford, you know, obviously Rasul's back, and Jamarcus Ingram. So no, we've got some guys. If you just start with those four that know our system, know the expectations, and you know they'll be looking to compete. So, no, I think we got guys that can line up and that we believe in. Yeah, I mean, I talked to Micah yesterday. It was good to see him. We FaceTimed for a little bit, living that California life that he is. But he's the best. Can't get enough of Micah Hyde. Just his energy. Like, you forget when you're away from someone. You know, but just he's got that infectious smile. He, you know, some people see the world half glass empty. He sees it not half full. He sees it 100% full. And just I wish I woke up every day with the perspective he's got. He's just such a good dude. Can see everything, mature beyond most players' years. And so we had a great conversation about life and things like that. You know, I don't think he has – totally made a 100% decision either way. I didn't get into him, hey, are you 95% leaning one way or the other? Didn't push it. We just checking on him. He's checking on how things. I know he talked about his softball deal. He's going to be here. He's excited to come back, you know, next month after the draft and be around the guys. He was pumped about that. But I can't tell you if he's going to play again or not. I don't have that concrete answer. Yeah, really good player. You know, had a really fun career to watch his play. I think he came into Iowa originally as a safety, and then they moved him to corner. Just his talent can play it. You know, I think he's one of those guys that wherever he goes, they'll figure out the best spot for him. I could see some teams. Matt saying maybe they got a bigger hole at safety, let's put him over there, or hey, this guy can, you know, we're going to pop him in a corner, he showed he could do it in college, we'll do it here. I mean, he also adds to your return game. He's a pretty good returner and good ball skills, things like that. So it was a joy to, we met him at the combine, but it was a joy to have him here. You can talk a little bit longer to him. Obviously he was coming off the injury, so he just did his pro day last maybe Monday or so. So he's still coming from that. He didn't have a full time to train, but thought he did a good job in his pro day.
Whether it's NIL or COVID or just the more easy it is to transfer in college, it seems like there are more guys that have played multiple years in different programs, maybe three different programs.
Yeah.
How does that change the workload of evaluating those players?
Yeah. Thad, I think sometimes you're talking about in the old days, you got a scout who's in the Southeast. He's been there for 5-10 years. He knew who this kid was all the way along. So you're kind of connecting dots. Guy transfers, I'm making up a school, from Florida to USC. You know, this scout's going to give this scout a little heads up. This is the background that I've been tracking this kid. This is the background that this school saw him. may want to start with your questions at this school when it's time for him to come out like that. So you're kind of, and you're right, there's guys that are three schools. So they're bouncing around. It's really becoming to, you know, college football right now, major college football is becoming into a bunch of one-year deals. These coaches are having to, you know, I've talked to enough coaches and they're as worried, you know, they're hitting the portal, but they're trying to re-recruit their own guys back that you just assume probably as a fan this guy will be back, but that's not the case with NIL if someone else offers them. But, yeah, it's up to our scouts to kind of connect the dots. And then, you know, as we get to know them, Thad, we'll ask them questions. Why'd you leave? You know, the example I gave you, Florida. What made you go to USC? Well, I wanted to play with this guy, or this coach was going to – he recruited me. He left, and this new coach didn't really see me the same way. There's all sorts of stories. Obviously, money talks too. That's this day and age. That's usually the leading reason that I'm finding. But we do like to ask. And was it because you lost out of competition? You know, coaching changes. There's so many variables.
Bills GM Brandon Bean, he's going to keep rolling. We are very late to a break, though, so we're going to get in a couple of spots here, come back, and hopefully have more from the Bills GM. Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, also scheduled to speak as well. So stay tuned. All that ahead here on WGR. Brandon Bean is wrapped up with the Buffalo media. Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, also scheduled to speak. Allen's first comments since Diggs was traded. I think there is actually, I've been meaning to watch this on YouTube, Ryan Horvat Golf 9 days ago posted a 1 hour and 3 minute video of him and Josh Allen in a golf match against each other. So I don't know when that was recorded, though. Was that pre-Diggs trade? Was that after the Diggs trade? I haven't watched it yet. I tend to think that if Allen said anything about Diggs in that we would have heard about it. You know, 700,000 viewers. If he said something, I'm imagining someone would have made it. One of those would have made it to Twitter, and then we would have seen it secondhand. Sal Capaccio is down at One Bills Drive. All right, Sal, what a headliner from Brandon Bean's press conference. What do you think?
I don't know if there's a headliner, right? I mean, he kind of was basic, you know, kind of sticking to the script, kind of close to the vest on draft stuff. I do think, though, that, you know, when you read the quotes about trading top 10, no one in the top 10 is going to call us. Well, doesn't mean, can someone, what about you calling them? He's like, well, there's no rule. I can call them. I mean, that kind of, when you look at it, you hear how he says it, the body language. I think, you know, people want to read into it a certain way. Here's how I read into it. He's being honest, which is he's not going to get many calls from teams in the top 10 to move down to 28. Nobody's going to call him to do that, Joe. It would have to take him calling up and really making it worthwhile for someone to, you know, even continue that conversation. That's going to be tough to do. I'm not ruling out that he wouldn't want to do that, but he even said to the media, you think they'd take my call? Like, come on, guys. Like, that's a really big jump. Now, it doesn't mean he can't do it. But I do think, though, you know, he talked about, you know, a move more into the teens or the 20s, like something like that. Maybe teams would be, you know, more willing and more realistic. So I think we have to at least continue that conversation that that's possible. I also thought it was notable. I think a trade down could be even, you know, like in the cards in some sort of scenario based on how he spoke about not having 28 first round grades, more than last year, but not 28. And he said he thinks there's a bigger gap. This is interesting. Bigger gap between the top of round two to the bottom of round two for their grades than there is maybe from the bottom of round one to the top of round one. So Joe, does that mean maybe trading down a little bit, getting more value and adding another, you know, pick along the way? That could be something he might want to do.
I think the fact that he even brought up the story of Dalton Kincaid last draft and that they could have moved back, and maybe even he's saying they would have if Kincaid wasn't there, and the first round grades comment, like, yeah, I'm definitely thinking after this press conference, like, oh, yeah, he could move back. I don't know that I want to predict it, but I also, you know, I can imagine what you would say to me in a week if they traded down out of the first round. He would say, I don't think we should be that surprised, right? He just kind of gave light to this a week ago.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm like, hey, we're going to be here next Thursday night, a week from now, and we're going to be sitting here. And last year, the 28th pick was made at 11:30 p.m. And yeah, if we're sitting here at 11:30 and the Bills are on the clock and suddenly like, hey, they just traded their first round pick, we could walk out of here at midnight and they had not made a pick throughout the day. And that might just be what happens, Joe. And then all of a sudden you get to day number two and now you have an extra pick because guess what? Let's go back to what he said at the owners meetings. Very disappointed they didn't get that third round pick. They were upset about that. I think he would like to get that third round pick back. That's more capital. I did ask him about next year's second. Does it make it, you know, a little bit more likely or easier, I guess, to make a deal now that you have that second next year? And he said it's all capital, of course, right? Now that it's all capital, you have it. But you're generally talking about, you know, if you want to move up, you're probably talking about giving up next year's first. Now, if you want to do something a little different later on, you have that second next year that you can play with a little bit.
Yeah. He basically confirmed, right, Sal, that they'll do something at wide receiver without giving away like exactly what they do and how much they'd spend. He defended his core, but I mean, he said the words, you know, I'd still like to do something.
Well, here's what I think. I'm going to ask you. Do you believe, and again, when we say this, it's not that, you know, not going to sit here and go, Brandon Bean's a liar, but he's going to say things, not going to give away leverage. That's why they say things, not to give away leverage. Do you believe him when he says, we don't really need a number one wide receiver in this offense? Josh Allen doesn't need a number one wide receiver. It could still be a successful offense. Or do you think he really believes he needs a number one wide receiver?
I think he probably thinks they need a number one wide receiver. Or can I say wants a number one wide receiver? Like, there are other ways to win. They just saw the Chiefs win a Super Bowl without, like, a true bona fide number one wide receiver. But he also just had Stephon Diggs for 4 years and knows exactly how valuable that
Agreed.
Is. So, yeah, I might just, if I could just change the language a little bit, I might say he wants one without saying he feels like he absolutely needs one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you there. He says that. I think he's just not giving away leverage. He doesn't want a team go, sure, dude, you have no number one wide receiver on your team. And he's going to be like, I don't need one. I have Josh Allen. That's his counter, right? He just told the world right. that. I think that's what this is. That's him saying to the rest of the league, don't try and force me into something I don't want to do because guess what? I have Josh Allen. I don't have to. But of course, because Joe, he said himself just a few years ago, I got to get this kid a number one wide receiver, basically. Now, granted, that was also at a time where Josh was in a different part of his career. I understand that. How many times have we talked about Brady and Rodgers and the way Mahomes, right? You just brought it up. These franchise quarterbacks don't have to have one. But he said to open this press conference, he was asked a question about wide receiver, number one. He said, we don't have someone who fills the number one role. That's what he said. I still think they feel they have to get one somehow.
Who do you know who we'll hear from next or not yet?
Sean McDermott in about 10 minutes,
okay.
15 minutes. We'll see how that goes, but that's the plan here. And then Josh Allen is scheduled sometime in the, well, it says 12:30, but a lot of times that's fluid based on the workouts they're doing and things like that. So we'll hear from them, and then, you know, we'll have all of that available for everybody to listen online, of course.
All right, we'll take a timeout here. We will come back. We'll wrap things up on the Extra Point Show. Of course, Sabres locker room cleanout day continues. That's going on right now. Dylan Cousins and Bo Byram have both spoken. Byram actually maybe is right now. Both have said they're going to play for Canada at the Worlds, and we'll get you more throughout the day. And, of course, Sabres Live as well on what some of the Sabres players are having to say down at KeyBank Center. Stay tuned. Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show rolls along. We'll wrap things up after this timeout here on WGR. Wrapping things up here on a Thursday edition of the Extra Point Show. A lot of talking these days. Bean, soon Allen, soon McDermott, Cousins, Byram, Kevin Adams. No one will top Kevin Adams from this week, though. That's my opinion. Dahlin, Tuck, Thompson, Greenway, Skinner. We've heard from them all. No one will top Adams. Adams was just, you know, we're 2 days from it now, but hit every single note that you wanted him to hit on the state of the team and what you got going forward. The playoffs are all determined in the NHL. There's one more night we have tonight to look at as well, but everything's already decided. Last night was a historic night for Nikita Kucherov. 100 assists. How crazy is it that in all of NHL history, 100 plus years of NHL history, there were only three players ever, Gretzky, Lemieux, and Orr, to have 100 assists in a season? Three ever in 100 plus years. And this season, there were two. Kucherov got to 100. McDavid got to 100. Crazy. Last night was also historic because it's the last night in Arizona Coyotes history. And I was not anticipating being sad for Coyotes fans because I've been wanting the Coyotes to move for years. I hate that they're there, that it just had never made sense to me. But, man, some of the stories and seeing the fans crying there, the ones that actually do care, and hearing Luke Lapinski yesterday on this show about how fans have been told for years that they don't exist, like, I get it. Tough moment. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, 6 a.m. Stay tuned. Sabres Live on the way next here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I met a guy recently who told me that he spends roughly $250,000 a month. I talked to another person recently who made $50 million at the age of 30. What do you do with that money? How do you spend it? How do you not spend it? What do you invest in? If you meet a rich person, these are questions everyone wants to know, but you're too embarrassed to ask. That's the whole premise of MoneyWise. We talk to real people who have made a significant amount of money, and we ask them all about their finances. My name's Sam Parr, and the podcast is called MoneyWise. That's one word, MoneyWise. You can find MoneyWise wherever you get your podcasts.